When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
Pistol formation. Motion man Mooney, Robinson in the backfield, the throw from Cousins, it's caught at the 40, moving upfield, Hodge, he could go, 10-5, touchdown, that is a winner for the Atlanta Falcons, 45 yards, and it's over.
That was our next guest, Ian Eagle, on the call on Westwood One earlier this month. He will be on the call tonight, the Texans and the Jets, Thursday night football. Pregame coverage at 6:30, kickoff 7:15. You'll hear it right here on the Score of the Odyssey app on Westwood One. He will also be on the call for Bears Cardinals alongside Charles Davis on CBS, that 3:05 kickoff. So, and not to mention calling Bulls Nets on Friday. So all things coming up, Chicago and the Score here for Ian Eagle, who is with us on the Score Hotline presented by Circa Resort and Casino, CircaLasVegas.com. Hello, Ian. How are you?
If I have a issue with Nikola Vucevic catching a touchdown tonight, that's when I know there are problems. That's where wires have crossed, and now I don't have control of my brain anymore.
Do you ever worry about that? I mean, you're such the consummate professional. You've been doing this for so long at such a high level. Has that anything remotely like that happened to you?
No, the only thing I could think of when my son was playing Little League Baseball, one of his coaches, and he had a son on the team as well, was Brian Lopez. And I went to a practice, was helping out a little bit, but I had a run. I had a lead because I had a net game that night.
Oh, and you had Brooke Lopez.
And I had Brooke Lopez going to the rim with a power layup, and I called him Brian Lopez. Yeah. And I think it made the guy's year.
We had
four viewers.
Well, you've had more viewers for these Thursday night games than maybe Thursday nights past. I love that the quality of the Thursday night game is not as much in question as it has been. What are you looking at tonight? I mean, this is so intriguing for so many reasons to have Aaron Rodgers and the losing streak they're on against a Texans team that's just trying to figure out who besides Tank Dell is going to be thrown to.
Yeah, who knew that this is where we would be hitting week 9, where it was complete disaster for the New York Jets. Houston proving last year wasn't a fluke, but they're also learning it's hard to replicate when you don't have healthy bodies. C.J. Stroud is really everything that you look for in a leader, in someone that you can build a team around, that can be the face of a franchise. He checks every box, and I do think that the guys on that team feed off his confidence, his energy. So I still have a lot of optimism in regards to Houston figuring it out. They get Nico Collins back, hopefully, at the start of next week when they begin practicing following Thursday Night Football. So the loss of Stephon Diggs, yes, but I think there might be enough still on that roster and maybe a trade up their sleeve to be ready for a playoff push. The Jets, look, I do their preseason package. I have lived in this area my entire life. You hear time and time again from people that say it's the same old Jets, and as someone that is a rational person, I try to view it through this prism of, that's not true. That's not how it works. But it just may be true. It just might. It might be the reality that this franchise faces. This has gone as poorly as you could have possibly imagined. If you looked at the worst case scenario, it's played out that way every step.
Well, when you have someone who essentially got everything he wanted, and an owner who is completely on board in indulging every last whim. It's like every time, it's like the old man in the manse who pulls the sash or rings the bell to have his crumpets brought to him. They have waited on Aaron Rodgers hand and foot. And this is what they've gotten. Is there any escaping what we're really seeing here?
Well, the only escape, I think, moving forward is their roster is not that bad. I do think it's actually a really talented roster. I don't know what plan B is going to be. My presumption is that Aaron Rodgers won't be here. The coaching staff won't be here. The front office won't be here. So it's going to be a complete reset for the franchise unless something drastically changes the rest of the way this season. But it's not like the cupboard is bare. Someone that comes in as a head coach and with a staff is going to walk into a locker room that has a bunch of pieces, and obviously they would have to address the quarterback spot. I think in a way, and I'll just make this one comparison because you guys could relate in the city that you're in. When you're in a town that has multiple sports teams in a specific sport, there's one that often becomes the dominant team because they have the storied history or they have the fan base that's built in that's been passed on generation to generation. And then there's the other that is constantly searching for relevance. And I think with the Jets, you can figure out which is which. They're always in search for grabbing a headline, creating some buzz, trying to get people to buy season tickets. And it's not always coming from a genuine place. And I often see that as how you get to where you are when the smoke clears. Again, you can make the comparisons to Chicago all you want, but that's a real thing. That's been the case for many, many years here.
Yeah, they're the Sox. Yeah,
I wasn't going to put a label on it. I was just to let people use their own devices to.
No, they're the Sox. It's okay.
Theater of the mind. Radio's theater of the mind, guys.
I've heard the comp before. I know Jets fans. I've got Jets fans in the family, and trust me, they behave a lot like White Sox fans. But the Bears game, for one, now has another storyline added to it, because while everybody is still watching the highlights of the handoff to Doug Kramer at the goal line that ricocheted off his taped-up fingers and went to the other team, just about a half an hour ago, Bears offensive coordinator Shane Waldron, when pressed on it, said he believes in the call, he thinks it was the right call at the time, and he would call it again. So I'm just trying to figure out the color of the sky in his world.
I think obviously these things pop up. It may not have been as big an issue if the fail Mary never takes place. You get the win, and while it might be part of the subtext, it doesn't move to the forefront because you're looking at a team that's 5-2, that's on the rise, that's riding a 4-game winning streak, that's going into Arizona looking to position themselves for a postseason run. I try to view it this way, which is if we spoke prior to the season and I told you, hey, the Bears are going to be 4-3 going into Week 9, taking on the Arizona Cardinals. Most Bears fans, without knowing how they got there, would say, okay, yeah, sign me up. I like that. The problem is you actually have to play the games and then you have to have feelings and emotions following the games. The most pressing question, as we know, is, all right, how does a team recover? Does this define your season? Is this a moment that the team will live in infamy forever because they did not recover from this loss? Or is it a challenge along the way and Caleb Williams and the Bears learn from it, rise from it, bounce back in Arizona and show the kind of gumption and grit that they have? That's really the crossroads here. I'm not even sure this game is going to define that. But there will be a sense from around the league of, all right, now what? Is this the end of the road? Were changes, major changes made at the end of this season based on a number of issues, but one of them being the fact that not only did they not defend the play correctly, but when given a chance to explain why they defended it or the philosophy, that didn't come out in a way that made a whole lot of sense. It was wonky, and that often can lead to major changes in philosophy or a change in approach to what the team wants to do. So you can draw your own conclusions. We're going to find out about that probably at the end of the season, but they do have a chance to right a wrong and get a win and change the narrative if they get it done on the road, which they have not been able to do quite yet.
I have actively been calling for much higher gumption levels. I've been using everything in my power in the bully pulpit that we have to increase gumption for all.
I don't even know if that's in the dictionary. It might be one of those words that we just use in sports and we have no idea where it came from. I don't remember ever getting a report card for my kids and the fifth grade teacher saying, "We're looking for more gumption out of your child."
So it is defined.
That's a legitimate point.
Dan's going to give you the definition.
It is defined as shrewd or spirited initiative and resourcefulness.
Oh, no, then I used it perfectly.
Yeah, you did indeed.
You absolutely did. The voice you hear is Ian Eagle, who will be on the call for that Bears-Cardinals game, along with Charles Davis on CBS. Kickoff, of course, 3:05, because 3:25 is probably out the window for the time being for this particular Bears team. What are you expecting in this matchup? What's got you excited about Sunday's game?
Well, I want to see how the quarterback responds, because there have been moments where you've seen what this could be, what this could look like. Again, who knows down the road who he's going to be working with on the offensive end? Is it this current group? Is it a different group that we feel like could bring his game to another level? Ultimately, I want to see him. I look back on my own broadcasting career, starting in 1998 on CBS, so doing the NFL and Peyton Manning's rookie year, later Tom Brady, guys that have had glorious careers, but getting a sense of who they are early, and it does give you insight. So sitting down with them, talking to them, and then watching them in person, to me, that's what I'm most looking forward to. And then there are a lot of similarities in what's going on with Chicago right now, how Kyler Murray started his career. Winning as the number one overall pick as a quarterback is not usually on the table. Andrew Luck did it with the Colts, but more often than not, you're going to a really bad team that doesn't have a whole lot of big-time talent around the young QB. The Bears have found ways to win, and to me, that's a really good sign, and a sign that they are following Caleb Williams, and there is a unique quality to someone like that that just knows how to do it. It isn't always the prettiest. You look at the numbers after, it doesn't blow you away. But even last week, if they make the one play to knock the ball down, that's a win. That goes in the W column, and that goes into part of the learning experience for a rookie QB. So to me, it's all about him and how he handles himself and his comportment in this game, and if he can get it done on the road, because that's really the next step in showing that you can travel and win.
Ian, always a pleasure. I will be interested to get your impressions of this very different Bulls team. You're not going to recognize the way that they play without DeMar DeRozan. And I'm a little concerned that in a year they have to be bad to keep their number one draft pick, that they might be better than I thought. So,
and I think there are other teams that are in a similar category, and the Nets might be in that same exact classification that you're laying out right now, that they play really hard and they're going to find wins in a season where you may want to find more losses, considering the draft that is up on the board for 2025.
Indeed. Thanks as always for joining us. We appreciate it.
All right, guys. See ya.
See ya. That is the great Ian Eagle.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in, trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.
Dan Bernstein, Marshall Harris, The Bernstein and Harris Show, middays 10 till 2 on 670 The Score.
You know, in terms of the Washington, you know, conversation, in terms of what that, you know, going back to that, I've talked with Tyreek. Him and I had a great conversation. And again, I'll keep it there with him and I. We had an after action report, you know, like we always do when we assess the game, you know, things we did well. You know, things we need to improve on, and then working from that and how we're going to improve those things. Every single week we do that. And, you know, we had that part of our Monday meeting and, you know, and talking to the guys through Tuesday. And again, it's all about accountability and execution, and that starts with me. And the game didn't finish the way we wanted it to. And again, that starts with me. We hold each other accountable that way. But again, we'll have answer for those things, and that's why we do the after action report.
Stop talking about accountability without accountability. How is that accountability expressed? How is it displayed? What are you doing? What are you actually doing? Don't say we have accountability. Okay, how? How are you? Well, the loss was punishment. No, it's not. No, it's not. That's, well, we had a nice talk. I don't care about some nice talk. I don't care if it's nice or not. Fix it. Stop making stupid mistakes. Stop losing games because you're stupid, and stop losing games because your players are stupid. How are you going to fix that? Have as many nice conversations as you want. Why should I think your nice conversations are going to stop you from being stupid and stop your players from being stupid? That's what I want to know.
What did you want to hear, Dan? What give me specifically.
I would like to hear something at least to the effect of, first of all, again, him not saying it starts with me. Him saying, here's where I messed up. These are the places where I told the players I messed up. I should have done this. I should have done this. Looking at it again, obviously, I should have done this. We should have taken a timeout before that final play. Somebody in the building, somebody in the arena should have seen the fact that we had a key player out of position. We should have called timeout. That's a start of things. But if you're Mr. Hits principal, you say, I have a zero tolerance policy for people making a mockery of the foundation of what and how I coach. And here's what I'm doing about it.
I understand and I agree with you that that's what could have been said regarding him diagramming the failure of the play. But I also ask this, what NFL coach has said where they failed on a particular play?
I think it's happened. I can't name it off the top of my head.
I know Dan Campbell's done it.
Yeah.
Dan Campbell does it. I feel like Dan Campbell will do it in a more general way. I don't necessarily know about the diagramming of specific
instances. Last year, it was a play. He said, that's my fault. Bad call.
Are you talking about like when he went for fourth down?
He said, I made a bad call.
Yeah, on the short side of the field.
Yeah, that's probably, I think that's a little, I even think that's a little different because they don't get into specifics usually.
This mealy mouth. Well, I appreciate your question. That's him. Just like, well, I understand. I need some more time to think of a satisfactory answer on this. I appreciate your question means I don't have an answer.
It doesn't have to mean I don't have an answer. It can mean I don't want to share the honest answer with you, the media. Because here's what I've learned over the course of time, and just accentuated with an exclamation mark point on this press conference. When he talks about accountability, he definitely ain't talking about accountability to the fan base or to the media. He's talking about accountability within that building. And what that means is to the front office, the players, the staff, and ownership. That's the only accountability that he's talking about. Because when they don't have a good enough record at the end of the season, he will be held accountable and that he will lose his job. That's what he's...
Well, that's coming regardless.
Okay, that's what I'm saying. So he's like, what's the point of me bringing everybody else into it if it's not going to make a difference? It's a bottom line business. It's an end results business. I understand why you want the answers.
Don't be scared.
I understand why you want the answers. I understand why you want him to be a guy that he's not.
I just want to look like a coach.
But
sound like an NFL coach for once.
Matt Eberflus is Matt Eberflus, and we have to accept that. No, it is good luck. Because as I've established, I don't think he's good enough right now. I'm giving him room to grow. Some people have stopped giving him room to grow, and that is understandable, and I understand why you would not. But to not give him room to grow at this point of the season with this much talent on the roster, Dan.
I went out of my way the entire offseason.
We know.
To say I was rooting for him. I was impressed with his desire to get better.
You even gave him the mulligan after 3 weeks.
I bet over backwards, going against everything I thought after that first press conference.
And my point is this. We're still following this team. We're still all in on Caleb Williams' development. There are certain things. We haven't even talked about Caleb Williams. And he had a bad game on Sunday. We have barely scratched the surface on Caleb Williams.
Team game.
He had an awful game. And he did hold himself accountable. When asked about the Hail Mary today, you know what he said? I got to do a better job in the first half. I've got to lead this offense and score more points so that we're not in that situation. Dan wants something like that from Matt Eberflus. Talking about the end of the game.
There were obvious mistakes. There were clear and obvious mistakes.
I'm with you.
No accountability for those mistakes.
I'm with you.
Zero.
Maybe there was accountability in that building. We don't know.
Okay, let me ask you this. If they lose on Sunday to the Cardinals, are you pointing to this as part of the reason why?
Not necessarily. I got to see the game.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree with him on that. It depends.
If there's more stupid penalties and we hear afterwards from the same captains about more bad practices and we see more fog of war on the sideline with nobody knows where everybody is. We'll judge every game as we judge every game. It's just that when a coach starts when his authority starts to erode, you don't get it back. You don't get it back.
I just think that there are too many parallels being drawn between a much different group of people. Just because the behavior might be similar, personality-wise...
I didn't mention Trestman. I just said, when you lose authority, you don't get it back. I saw it happen with Wanstead, too.
I know there's a lot of comparisons from one coaching era to another, but I do think this group of players, from everything I could tell, when we talk about the leadership councils, the ones that have spoken up, and we know... We heard from Caleb today, and hopefully we'll be able to get to some of that. But I think this group of players in this age, you have to be able to share that responsibility with them. And I think that's what he's trying to do here. Now, he ultimately may not be a good enough head coach. I told you, I'm not convinced. People are on me 2 or 3 weeks ago about how can you not, they've won 3 in a row, blah, 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 during the bye week. I was like, yo, they haven't done anything for me to get all excited about. I'm not getting lathered up over a 3-game winning streak against mid to terrible teams.
That's because we're looking at patterns here. We're trying to evaluate a big picture. And the issue to me is it's kind of what Robert Mays hit on a couple segments ago. If you missed it, go back and listen on Rewind on the Odyssey app. And I do that all the time. But it's Robert Mays talking about what the Bears did specifically this year, they started their quarterback clock. It's like they had 2 years free space, right? You didn't want to say you tanked. You didn't want to say you rebuilt, but that's what you did. That's what you did to earn your 2 years free space to start this quarterback clock. And the bigger question is, and this is a huge data point in this, is how are you going to evaluate this based on whether or not you have enough time on that clock to be with this head coach?
Yeah, I think the Matt Eberflus window is coming to a close at the end of this season. If he doesn't have a good season this year, and a good season to me is looking at, we'll have to see how the games play out. Remember, this is a team that hasn't lost a game by more than a score yet this season. They're 4-3, but no one's taking them behind the woodshed. But that's twofold. It's like no one's beating them down, but all these games seem very winnable. And so then you start looking at the coaching staff, and did they do enough to make a difference from a coaching standpoint? That there's enough talent on this roster to go to the playoffs.
Yeah, but is there enough to then, do the next thing, which is winning?
You got to get to the playoffs first. You got to get to the playoffs first.
But learning on the job doesn't really allow you to do the other thing.
Caleb Williams, to me, is the only one who is should be, quote-unquote, learning on the job. Caleb and Rome Odunze and whatever else rookie. Everybody else,
you have your answer about Matt Eberflus.
I'm getting it. I'm gathering an answer right now. It's
better over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit service ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
Talent that's here and the talent that is continuing to develop here. We obviously have some mainstay guys like Ian Happ.
Ian Happ, Cubs all-star outfielder.
Drilled in the air. It's got a chance. Get out the tape measure for Ian Happ all the way on to Waveland Avenue.
Absolutely crushed that ball.
What I love about Ian is very dedicated and serious about his craft.
Gold Glove Award winner.
And Happ makes a great catch up against the left field fence.
And that robs a home run.
Host of the Compound Podcast.
I went on the radio today and they were actually defending you, saying that we were giving you too hard a time for you doing all the topics last week.
Why was I getting a hard time?
Because you said you wanted to do your touching points. You said you wanted to do your touching points, and then you backed off. You're like, whoa, I don't have that many.
Connect Roasters coffee enthusiast.
Here's a man that probably has 5 fresh pots a day. He's got an insatiable thirst for coffee.
Ian Happ on 670 The Score.
We toast you, Ian Happ.
Indeed, we do. Didn't expect to be talking to Ian Happ today, but then the White Sox went and hired one of his former coaches and someone he knows well in Will Venable. So let's talk to Ian Happ on the Circa Sports Illinois hotline. Download the Circa Sports app today. You can follow him on Twitter at IHAP_1. Hello, Ian.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good. Thanks for doing this.
Yeah, no problem.
I guess we just want to start with your impressions of Will Venable. The fact that you were willing to come in on a day off on our show is a good example of how you must feel about him.
Yeah, Will's an awesome guy. He has been through the coaching ranks now. You know, he was with us as a first base coach and then obviously to Boston and Texas. So, you know, just awesome to see. I know he was very sought after the last couple off seasons and just very awesome to see him get an opportunity. I think just who he is as a person. He's really bright, really smart guy, but also, you know, played the game at the highest level for a long time. And so he's really good at relating to players and being able to kind of get the best out of guys. And he was a big part of, you know, me in, you know, those first couple of years playing outfield and full time and kind of learning that. And so, you know, he was great for me in my career.
That's how I felt when I worked with him in San Diego. And it was fun to talk to him when he joined the staff here at the same time you were there. And that outfield position comes to mind because he's been a willing starter. He's platooned as well. What were your takeaways from when he talked to you and wanted to share his knowledge?
You know, I think a lot of it as a young player was his experience as an outfielder and kind of making the smart and right play and what that meant and always kind of thinking ahead of the game. He did a lot for us on outfield positioning and kind of thinking through that, moving as a group. You know, those are all big things for me as a young player. And I had a tough year in 18. One of the things just talking about, like, yeah, at the time I was really down on it and he was, hey, you're going to look back and, you know, this isn't going to be your best year. You're not going to love it, but I think you'll find the positives in it and find a way to move forward. Now I do. It's just very true. Now I look back and say, you know, there was 18 was not my best, but there's a lot of things to take out of what that was and figure out how to get through a long season. And that the season, you know, in May, when you feel like you're underwater, there's a lot of season left. So just little things like that, that I really appreciated Will for.
Ian, certainly this is a challenging situation for anybody to step up for and to be a manager in a rebuild in probably the truest sense of the word. Are you surprised at all that this was the opportunity that he was willing to sign up for, given as you're more than familiar with the struggles the White Sox have faced?
You know, it's interesting. I think he is the type of guy that loves a challenge. I think he really feeds off that. And feeds off coaching young players, you know, developing talent. I think it's a real opportunity for him to have a voice in kind of the changing of the franchise and the culture and kind of what the organization wants to do, which I think is an awesome opportunity for him. And I have all the confidence in the world that he'll be able to kind of, you know, find his way and decide what, you know, what kind of he wants that to look like. And obviously as a kind of a young dude who's had a long coaching lead up to this, and hasn't, you know, I just think he was really, deliberate and smart about the way that he went, through his coaching jobs. You know, he wasn't bouncing all over the place. He wasn't going to take a managerial job just to do it. You know, he's been very thoughtful about this. And so, you know, he obviously feels this is the right decision.
Have you ever seen him be authoritative? Have you ever seen, and I know he's respected and well-liked as a guy. Have you ever seen him get tough with a player or say something like, hey, look, this is serious and I need this out of you right now?
You know, for us, it was just a little bit of a different role for him. You know, he wasn't in that kind of that role with our group. You know, he wasn't the bench coach and he wasn't, yeah, I think the assistant manager, like he was in Texas. So, I think he was definitely really good at coming to guys when things happened, especially, you know, outfield positioning and moving around and being diligent about those things, as well as base running. But, you know, I'm sure his experience in the last, what has it been, 4 years or so, I think he's probably learned a ton, and under some very successful managers too, which if you look at kind of the managers that he's coached under, you know, not only Chicago, but Boston and Texas, I think there's just some really great personalities and experience guys that have won, that he's such a smart guy. I expect nothing but him to pick everybody's brain and take the best from each guy.
That was my impression, was it's not just the resume, it's the resume with those teams. And, you know, with you guys as well, 2018, I know, may have been rough, but it was also still 2 years removed from a World Series. You know, you're still talking about a high pedigree there. I can't imagine what he must have been able to learn on Bruce Bochy's staff.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Joe Maddon, Alex Cora, and Bruce Bochy, and, you know, World Series in Texas. Yeah, it's just all those things, all those experiences are what are going to form him into the manager that he's going to be. And like I said, I have a ton of confidence that he's going to be great at it.
What were your thoughts when you saw those two asshats assault Mookie Betts last night?
Passionate fans.
Stop it.
That's so diplomatic.
Your first thought was not, well, those are some passionate fans. Come on.
I don't know if you saw Mookie's interview, but he did a really great job of just, it was irrelevant. It wasn't a changing point in the game. They got the call right. You know, there's nothing, you know, nothing to do about it. And he moved on from it very quickly. And I thought that was pretty professional of him. You know, that he's right. You know, it didn't change the game. They got the call right and there's no fuel to the fire there. You don't want to say anything and fuel anybody up. It was obviously not, those guys were kicked out of the stadium for a reason, but, no impact on the game. And, Mookie was fine. The family's fine. So you just keep moving.
I mean, any surprise, though?
He could have gotten hurt.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking, too, that this is a Hall of Famer at the peak of his powers who could have torn a ligament in one of his hands.
Yes. But it didn't happen. Nothing bad happened. Everybody's fine. And I'm glad that everybody was okay coming out of that. You know, obviously you want to have everybody respect the game and the players, but like I said, passionate fans.
I don't know if you saw the article by Jesse Rogers, but he interviewed the guys and they said that they were going to be allowed back in tonight. Are you surprised by that? And should they be banned after doing what they did?
A little bit surprised. Hope their seats aren't in the same spot. Maybe moving back a few rows, but everybody. I didn't see the interview. I don't know how they feel about that afterwards. In the moment, things happen, and hopefully, they've learned from that and won't do it again.
You're too nice.
Way too nice. Yeah. These guys were escorted out of the building. Reports of racial slurs and all that. I'm just like,
publicly flogged.
Yeah.
Wait a second. Did you go to F1 in Austin? Did you do that whole deal?
Oh, yeah.
How was that?
Had a blast. It was great. It was awesome. Went on Saturday and Sunday, and it was a lot of fun. McLaren had a pretty good showing, but it was great to be a part of it and see it. And yeah. It's such a fun event.
Ian, thanks for doing this. Much appreciated.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Have a good one.
I mean, I think both of them are spot on. And Cole kind of mentioned that yesterday, just with respecting the game in a way. And it's something that everyone needs to hear, right? Because it's a game where... we're only as good as it's truly like our last result. And it's a result business. That's kind of what we're in. And at the end of the day, we didn't win the game. So you go back and look at every single thing that you do throughout the week, how it's taught, how we're executing. You go back and look and try and switch all of those things or try to figure out a way to make that process better. But at the end of the day, we didn't get it done. Just kind of like what Jalen said. And that's real.
That is TJ Edwards agreeing with what he heard from both Caleb Williams and Jalen Johnson about practice, about what's going on in practice, about making sure they get it right enough during the week. And that's why I wanted to follow up. It's one thing to have your Jedi Council meeting after the fact and say, well, let's do this. But you want it to be collaborative. You want them, if you notice it during the week, don't tell me after you lost on Sunday.
Oh, no, I still want you to say stuff.
But that's fine. But I'm saying, make sure it, during the week, as it's happening, say, hey, is that something we want to do again? Is that something that does everybody have this? Are we on? And wherever it may be, if you learn something in the meeting room and maybe the next day you can go to and tell the coaches, look, there's something we didn't quite nail down.
Not to get all Brene Brown on you, but you can use shame to your advantage. Move past it in a productive way. It will lead to wins.
Is that what you see happening here?
I see people trying to.
Well,
you don't get that honest and that vulnerable as an NFL player, as we've heard all week, unless you want something to change.
Well, I think
I don't know.
It's part of the reason I think there needs to be discipline of Tyreek Stevenson that is made publicly known. However you want to split the baby, and even if you do it like a college thing and say he's not going to play the first series or whatever it is because you still think you need him, there has to be something. Something that is notable and tangible, and it should have happened already.
That's part of the problem.
Yes, Studs?
I just want to push back on that a little bit. You have now multiple of his teammates saying that we need him. What he's been through is punishment enough, and they just want to move on.
I disagree with him. I disagree that it's punishment enough.
But these are his teammates, though.
I think that
matters.
But I disagree with them.
Well,
I don't think it's punishment enough.
I'll say this. Good point.
Something that egregious.
Dan,
he lost them the game.
A good point. Well,
He
one play doesn't lose you the game.
Well, that play did.
I'm a big believer in
he
that.
He ran over and it was,
he was not the only one out of position on that play. Elijah Hicks was too.
Yeah, that's true.
And he's gotten no flack this week.
He wasn't looking at the play for 4 seconds.
We still out of position. To a different standard.
He was still out of position.
But you're right.
TJ Edwards made
there are different
points.
Reasons for being out of position, though, and that's where the detail is.
I think there does need to be some type of reprimand. The punishment, we'll see what that is. There's no way he's not being reprimanded. He's being reprimanded, as we know, by his teammates. And then, yes, Matt Eberflus, Ryan Poles, whoever else, Eric Washington, whoever else should be in that room having a sit-down conversation with him at minimum. And then whatever they come up with, whether Patrick Manley, I thought, had a good idea, hey, you're not going to start. And if you're not going to start, that doesn't mean you're even sitting out the whole first series. You're just not going to have... You started all 17 games this season.
Yeah, that's fine.
And that's fine. I think that's enough. I think because of what we heard his teammates play, honestly, from what my assessment as an individual saying, hey, they do need this guy if they're going to take on a very difficult challenge in, first of all, winning on the road, because we know what that is, and also a dual threat quarterback in Kyler Murray and what he's capable of, Trey McBride, all of that. I think you can punish him and he could still – beyond the team,
fine.
Helping the team.
I'm not
win.
Saying cut him.
I know.
David Haas said to bench him for a week. I don't think
any of that was ever on the table. And yeah, I think that's why Matt Eberflus was so shocked and had to clarify, what do you mean?
But you're right about the starting.
Yeah,
I think, because like when you go to a negotiation, you want to be able to say, I started X amount of games
starts
this past
matter.
Season.
That's okay. That works for me.
That's effectively... That's affecting your money.
Yeah, I think people listening to you though right now might think you want some super harsh punishment. When I think it just has to be, as you said, a publicly acknowledged, this is your crime, this is your
formal
punishment.
Especially because your coach was hired for his discipline and structure. It's why he's here. The whole HITS principle is the foundational to this guy, and to have it mocked. To have it completely clowned, the essence of your head coach was ignored. It just hits very specifically in this moment with this coach more than it does some other guys. And I certainly think it merits a formality in the level of discipline. And there are a lot of ways to look at it. I think, you know, Manley's got great points. I do think there's a way to get everything, to have him help the team, to have him be part of your effort to win next week, and also make it something more than just he gets to feel bad and tweet an apology.
And here's the thing is typically I might be on the side of nobody knows that they need to do better than that individual, but he did this once before. Like he got away with it when he did what he did in Houston. That was a ridiculously chippy game for many reasons, but he was a big part of why it got that way. And the fact that there was no self-evaluation or evaluation leading to this situation, I know you got to get yourself hyped up beyond all probability for a football game, and you have to picture things that make you angry beyond anything I can comprehend. However, other people are able to keep it together. So how do you know to yourself as to a man when you need to turn that off and on? Like, doing what you did was stupid at the end of the game. Stupid. That was a stupid decision that was made. Doesn't take away from his skill, but it does take away from the win-loss record, and that's the issue here.
No, I agree with that completely. My whole point was, yes, I agree with Dan in that there needs to be a publicly acknowledged punishment. I do also agree, though, with all these players, and especially TJ summed it up best, we need him. We are a better team with him on the field. And right now, the season's not lost. Far from it. They need to win games.
You know,
they need to be 5-3 at the end of the week.
A texter makes a good point here, too. Like, teammates shouldn't enforce discipline. That should be above them. Because just like you're
absolutely
saying,
yes,
like just like you're saying, TJ Edwards says we need him. You want TJ Edwards to always have that opinion about
coach
him.
Coach the team.
Well, yeah. but
manage.
Coach the team.
Yes, but as... Again, going back to Patrick Manley, because I agree with everything he said spot on. The punishment also depends on how important you are to the team. We've seen this in sports since we've been watching sports. We know what it is. There's a reason why some guys get punished much harsher than others for similar crimes.
Mm-hmm.
And so for this situation, knowing that you have in question whether or not you're going to have Jaquan Brisker, Kyler Gordon, And even if you get them back, you need your best secondary back there. That's the strength of the secondary, to be on the field. So just deal with it, fix it, and go forward.
It's just starting to remind me too much of what happened under Tressman. This is how it happens. This is what it looks like right before it starts to go bad. I want to hear what Dave Wannstedt had to say about how to handle a situation like that with punishing a player.
Stevenson, I mean, I'm wearing my national championship ring today, I guess, and I don't know. I mean, I feel bad for the kid because I like the kid. But the reality is, let's look at the history of these guys. I mean, when you get into the NFL, it's about 75% mental if you got the ability. This kid's got the ability.
Yep.
Okay, put that aside. But really, personal fouls, pass interference. Someone told me he busted a coverage in the game, gave up a pass play.
Yep, 61 yards.
You know what I mean? I mean, there's...
And he poked a guy. He had a personal foul. He poked a guy in the eye.
You know what I mean? There's a history here, is what I'm saying, guys. There's a history here with this guy. And unless he gets the mental part of being a professional, Don, the guy's going to cost you. Is this any different than a quarterback throws interceptions? What do we do? Said he can't play.
Right.
Put him on a bench. A running back fumbles, swerving, curving, you cut him. You know what I mean? On the sideline. Remember? Yeah. My point.
So what'd you do with Tyreek?
Would you bench him?
Coach, you got to sit him and say, listen, you know, that's right now you're detrimental to this football team winning. And you need to prove it, not just to me. This is a team thing. Flew's got to make decisions for a team. But you have to prove to this football team and me and everybody in here that you're going to be the show up early, stay
late.
You are going to bust your tail, guys.
You can't tolerate it.
I'll tell you something.
And Terrell Smith, let's not lose sight. And I know I'm jumping here. But the corner that they drafted out of Minnesota.
Is a good player.
2 years ago, it was a battle with training camp. We were all there. And Flus was trying to make a decision who gets the edge. So, I mean, and I don't want to say they got a guy, but they got a guy that I think can go in and
play. They got a guy.
I don't necessarily think he has to be entirely benched, but I do think, I'll go a little softer than Dave and sort of the old school idea here is there has to be top-down accountability.
Yeah, no, I think we're all in agreement on that specific point, and that's why we were all shocked by Eberflus seemingly unprepared stepping to the podium on Monday like you didn't know what question number 1, 2, and 3 were going to be. Maybe not the order of the questions, but you knew what the top three questions were going to be. You knew it was going to be Tyreek Stevenson. You knew it was going to be the Hail Mary and the play before the Hail Mary. Those were the top three topics that people were going to hammer you on Monday. We're all in agreement on that, right?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see what happens Wednesday when he gets back at that podium.
Dan Bernstein, Marshall Harris, middays 10 till 2.
In that particular situation, you always know that they're going to do, you know, with 6 seconds to go at the 35, they're going to either go for the end zone there or just try to get more yards and do that. So if you want to play sideline defense, what they're going to do is they're going to convert to the Hail Mary right there and then just run everybody off the sideline. Then you got to pick them up from the sideline and do the same job that you're going to do in the Hail Mary. So, you know, to me, we wanted to just bring them up so we wouldn't get something that's too far down the field, which was to the 48, and then we set up for our Hail Mary at the end.
Nope, not how it works. Not how it works.
How I explained it, Dan.
But all you did was allow them to throw a ball into the end zone instead of throwing a ball to the middle of the field where you could chase them down and end the game. That's just wrong. You have a choice to force them to do something they don't want to do rather than let them do something they want to do, which is the entire job of a defense.
There's a reason we're obsessed with Jalen Johnson's conversation yesterday. We talk to him every week as a station on the afternoon show. You just get more authentic answers, even than what we heard Cole Kmet say yesterday. There's a rapport there. It's a whole conversation. And to me, yes, that piece of sound that we played in the last segment is the biggest indictment. Like, that's the biggest takeaway I had. But number two is definitely him talking about what happened regarding not just the Hail Mary, but the play before.
And it's the, for me, it's the double down because we heard what he said after the game. Then he was asked and pressed about it on yesterday. So here's Eberflus standing by his choice to not defend closer on the, here's Jalen on Eberflus standing by his choice not to defend closer on that 13-yard completion to Terry McLaurin.
I think in that situation, I feel like it definitely could have been where, I mean, there's really two plays. I know one that we have, of course, everybody like lines up on the sideline and make him have to throw the ball inside or throw the ball away. Because I feel like two in that moment, I think it was about 8 seconds left, if I'm not mistaken. It might have been about 7 or 8 seconds left. I wasn't necessarily thinking Hail Mary, and I think they were on like the plus side of the 50 or the minus side of the 50. So it's like they're not throwing – to me, I didn't think they were throwing a 75-yard Hail Mary. So I think just in that, I think we definitely could have been up closer. And if they did go Hail Mary, we definitely have conversions within that coverage to where it's like, okay, if they go Hail Mary, we all got to match up and get a body on a body, and we still went over that plenty of times. So I think for me to kind of just wanted to, like you said, get up closer, because I mean those 10 yards to me made a big difference, because he didn't even get the ball to the goal line where they were at. So I mean, I feel like outside of if they wouldn't have got those yardage, I mean that yardage before, I think it definitely wouldn't even been a Hail Mary situation. It probably would have been one of those backyard ball where they just kind of throw the ball, try back and forth and try to figure out a way to get 60 yards or 70 yards, whatever it was. So it definitely could have been done differently. But I mean, at the end of the day, we had our thought process, and at the end of the day, we still could have found a way to execute.
Our thought process, because he has to lump it in. We as a team decided to do something clearly Jalen Johnson was not on board with. Listen to him talk, and the fact that he was able to explain it like everyone of us thought Matt Eberflus, after reflection, would be able to explain it.
That's the right answer.
Exactly. And he's not the head coach, though, so he just does what the head coach tells him to do.
That's the right answer.
But here's the part that really confounds me, is that for some reason, Eberflus thinks that all of these plays happen in a vacuum, that one doesn't lead to another. Like, he's so detailed-oriented when it comes to the tactics. And the best example is perhaps when he talked about what should have been a fourth Joe Flacco interception last year in the game against the Browns. Sure, in theory, but at the end of the day, these plays do lead to each other. There are odds. There are sequences. If you're closer to the end zone, odds are better that you're going to score a touchdown. This is not rocket science. But for some reason, that acknowledgement of it doesn't exist a lot of times, I think, in the answers regarding thought process and strategy.
Nothing he said makes any sense, especially because of what he did at the end of the first half. He got it right at the end of the first half, where he played the sideline defense, and they allowed a huge, useless middle of the field to be eaten up in the final time by Austin Ekeler.
And that, what you just said, is why I say it's the two hats. It's the two hats that have him acting uncharacteristically. As we know, he is a good defensive coordinator, and this is... But it's
how do you forget what you did at the end of the half?
It's twofold, though. It's twofold,
because
though.
You're busy calling a defense.
You're busy doing. You're busy adjusting and trying to figure it out.
He called the wrong defense. How busy was he?
That's what I'm saying. That's my point is, we know he's capable of. We've seen a lesson of it, but we don't know that he's capable of being a good head coach. And the head coach is the one who makes those types of decisions at the end of the game. You can like burn the whole fourth quarter. It's almost like his players, despite the decisions that were made by the coaching staff, said, it doesn't matter. We're still going to be in position to win. We're still going to get the three and out after we give up the fumble on the goal line. We're still going to go down the field and score, put together another game-winning drive since we didn't score on the last one. We're going to do all of these things and have less than 30 seconds left that we just have to defend and not give up a touchdown. Not a field goal. A field goal, all that does is send it to overtime. And this team is out of timeouts now coming down the field. It's wild.
But that's the part that I can't reconcile. Like that's the dissonance for me, is in doing two things at once, are you doing either well?
No. And that was my point.
Right.
I think he's wearing too many hats. He's, as we like to say, doing the most. As we like to say, he's got too much dip on his chip.
Dip is a good thing. I would argue that it's something else. But in this case, to me, you're... first of all, you got away from the things both offensively and defensively that you had success with, right? Again, I'm really appalled that that happened after a bye week where suddenly Cole Kmet, by the way, on National Tight Ends Day was nowhere to be found, especially in the first half. You decided just because you didn't have Kyler Gordon that you couldn't scheme blitzes anymore, which also confused the heck out of me. You finally started to add more pressure in the second half. But again, this all goes back to the same issues. They're three and out to start a game again. They have trouble scoring in the first quarter again. How many times do we have to see you make the in-game adjustments? I can't even talk about a four-minute offense or a two-minute offense or a two-minute defense with this team. They've shown nothing to indicate that that strategy is part of the curriculum right now.
Okay, so that's the beginning of the game, which there are plenty of issues to talk about, but let's get to the very end of the game as seen by Jalen Johnson, who with Spiegel and Holmes walked us all through the final play of the game from Sunday.
How should the play have been defended?
I mean, it's really a man-to-man play. You double-team the best player. I mean, whoever their selected player is, you double-team him. Everybody else is, of course, body on a body. And then, shoot, really just trying to stop a guy from getting to the ball. And then KB is the jumper. He goes, trying to knock the ball down. And then that's pretty much it.
So when you guys
we have a back tip guy too, just in case something like that happens as well. So
yeah. And Kevin Byard mentioned he said that's Elijah Hicks, who's the back tip guy. Like we all been trying to figure out who's doing what, and you were bodying up on McLaurin, right?
No doubt. And too, I mean, honestly, realistically speaking, it was a whole lot of things that could have been done differently. And I think that's like the frustrating part, of course, not being where it was supposed to be lined up. I feel like just for us in that moment, it was a rush situation when it didn't have to be. I feel like we definitely could have slowed down. Definitely, I mean, kind of just looking at it, I feel like we could have possibly took a timeout or something to kind of get everybody situated, figure out who we're going to box out, kind of get everybody calmed down and just ready for that last play. But of course that didn't happen. But I mean, at the end of the day, we still kind of, we knew our responsibilities. That definitely isn't something that can go without being said. We knew our responsibilities, but it's a lot harder when you're trying to figure things out on the go versus in practice. It's a control setting. Okay, hey, this is who we're double teaming. We get everybody lined up, make sure they know where they're at versus in that situation after the play where Terry McLaurin called the first pass. Now we're kind of looking and scrambling, like, okay, what, like, who are we double teaming? Who's going to be who? Where are we going to be at? I mean, I was calling Tremaine over from the other side of the field. I'm like, I'm just trying to figure out, okay, like, who we double team? I'm like, shoot, let's just double Terry McLaurin. Like, he's their best guy. So, I mean, we were kind of doing stuff like that on the fly. That wasn't even really communicated beforehand. We were just trying to get in the best position we could on the fly, snap the ball. I mean, everything happened the way it happened so quick, and then we weren't lined up where we were supposed to be.
Yeah, you heard him.
How many people does it take to call a defense? You got Caleb Williams on the sideline screaming at Eberflus, move guys up. You got Kevin Byard understanding that everything was screwed up. And now you've got Jalen Johnson and Tremaine Edmonds like, who do we double team? What the hell?
So that was his point. If you call a timeout there, you can reset everything. And he was asked, Jalen Johnson was asked,
yep,
hey, does anyone on the team have the authority
on
player-wise
on defense
to call a timeout? We know quarterbacks do it all the time. We know the head coach can do it. Assistant coaches aren't allowed to call timeouts. And he said, no one has been given, you know, clearance. And he said that hasn't been a problem before, so it wasn't something that he thought of. But I'm you know what? I guarantee you when that quote-unquote leadership council meets with the head coach, that will be one of the things on the table because they don't ever want to go through this again.
Don't captains usually have the authority to call a timeout?
But
the guy with the green dot? Like, so Tremaine Edmonds should be able to call a timeout.
No, I'm saying it's not that they can't. Any player on defense can call a timeout. I think a captain is usually what does it. And you're right. It's usually the middle linebacker on a given defense that does it. But he's saying
there's been no discussion
about this to say, hey, you guys, if you see something that's terribly screwed up, I don't know, 12 men on the field, whatever, call timeout. That has not been discussed.
It is insane to me that they had three timeouts and didn't use a one of them.
This is one of the best players at his position in the NFL, too. This isn't some schmuck This is a guy, a respected veteran at the peak of his powers.
They all are.
Specifically what Jalen Johnson is saying, but you're right. Yeah, they all are. But this guy right now, this guy, all he's doing is an unbelievable job. And he's saying, we're not redoing plays. We're not correcting it in the moment. We need a better operation throughout the week. And our operation during the game was disorganized, and we're trying to figure it out as we go.
Off the bye.
It really makes me wonder who's doing the adjusting at halftime. Honestly, it makes me wonder who's adjusting. Are players adjusting?
No. I think coordinators are adjusting. I think coordinators are doing their job.
You see a little bit of it, like, because we saw it, you know, we saw the defensive scheme change at the half. We saw the offensive scheme change somewhat, but Caleb checked down out of a lot of stuff. But it does make me ask the question, like, how much of this is player observation during the game? And it should be in any functioning team. But how much of it is a player observation during the game, and how much of it is them having to remix the entire thing?
Also, I want to point out that in that interview, which if you haven't had a chance to go listen, that's why the Odyssey app exists. Let's be honest. There's the segment, Go Find It, from Spiegel and Holmes yesterday. Listen to that entire interview with Jalen Johnson. It was a masterpiece, both from an interviewing perspective and just an authenticity perspective. It was so good. So go listen to that if you have a chance, and we'll get more into this with... Oh my goodness. There's so many layers to this.
Only the Bears could take something that bad and make it worse. Only they could find a way to make it worse.
There's a lot of dysfunctional teams right now in the NFL. Unfortunately,
and in the city.
Yeah, maybe the White Sox.
But unfortunately, I think the problem is, you know, they're not the team they thought they were if they can't get the simple stuff right.
Ladies and gentlemen, joining us now is a man who's got a massive brain.
Mike Florio.
He used to be a lawyer, then he decided to take his talents to the internet.
NBC Sports.
I'm sorry I'm late. I was talking to Robert Kraft.
That isn't the time for an airing of grievances.
Pro Football Talk.
I got a lot of problems with you people. Now, you're going to hear about it.
With Bernstein and Harris on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Florio time. Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk is with us on the Circus Sports Illinois hotline. Download the Circus Sports app today. Twitch.tv/Chicago670TheScore. Hey, Mike.
Hey, what's up? How's everybody?
Well, we'll see. It's a big day for the Bears, as apparently Matt Eberflus needs to either reestablish accountability, authority. We've got an erosion of his authority ever since the game ended and ever since his mistakes were obvious. Multiple players, including four captains now, have very clearly called him out and called out the coaching. So what do you do now?
Well, you don't let one loss become two. And you've got to shake this one off, go to Arizona on Sunday, and get back in the win column, because that's what can happen after a loss like that. When you feel like the game's won, something crazy happens at the end, bad discipline, bad coaching, bad playing, bad everything to allow that to happen. You've got to find a way to turn the page. And it's not easy to do, because the players are going to be thinking, boy, how different things would be if we were 5-2 and not 4-3. And we had that game won. How did that happen? Oh, woe is us. You need to find a way to shake things up. And they've got the balance of the week at practice to try to do that.
I also think, Mike, that this was a big test nationally for the Bears. We talked about it on this show a lot. The concept of an important road game. The game gets flexed. We saw a hurt rookie quarterback on the other side who ended up outplaying everybody, I feel like. This was a test for them, and they didn't pass it. What were your impressions just from where you sit?
Well, the Bears did a nice job of turning things around when they were unable to score points. I wasn't a big fan of the refrigerator Perry play. That's something that you use when you're leading and testing things out and maybe trying to deliver a dagger. You don't do that to try to get back into a game and take the lead in a game where you've been trailing the whole way. It's just got to be a hell of a feeling to go from, wow, we can't do anything, to, hey, look at this. We've taken the lead late despite our effort to not take the lead late by doing the refrigerator Perry play that blew up, to it all fell apart in that one moment. So it's a lot to process. And that's the thing about the NFL. There's always a fresh train on the track and tracks. And sometimes that can be good and sometimes it can be bad. And I think the huge challenge, as I already said, don't let this one become two. Refocus. It's easy to say, it's hard to do. Forget about last week and put yourself in a position where it doesn't come down to a Hail Mary, where the game's decided by the time the Cardinals have the ball with the clock running out in the fourth quarter.
There's been so much attention on Matt Eberflus and kind of his process, and he's been a guy as a head coach who has called defensive plays. We know the man is a good defensive coordinator. I'm just curious, because you talk to so many people around the league and have that national vantage point, what are people saying about Matt Eberflus and his future with the Bears if what we saw last night is just the latest example of him not being able to kind of get over the hump of, hey, I'm a head coach who can lead a team to where teams want to go, which is a good team and also a playoff team. It seems like that's not happening right now.
Well, look at the calendar. It's October 30th. We know that the day after the season ends, the regular season ends, there will be firings. A lot of times they happen even before we get to what they call Black Monday. It happens after the games end on the final Sunday of the regular season. The seeds are planted for that right around now. We get into November and teams start making the decisions that they will or won't be looking for coaches. And they start kicking the tires on who they might be looking for in conversations that never happened. Maybe multiple levels deep below the owner and the coach occur. But you don't just roll out of bed the day after the season ends and say, hey, I'm changing a coach today. You know it's coming. So now, in the immediate aftermath of that loss, I think Eberflus has to realize, hey, I can end up on the endangered species list here if this continues. They're watching me more closely, and they're asking themselves tough questions as to whether or not there should be Cliff Kingsbury brought in. That's the reality of having a defensive head coach. Your rookie quarterback does well. The offensive coordinator becomes a coaching candidate elsewhere. And I've already had Bears fans say, we need to hire Cliff Kingsbury, even before what happened on Sunday. So that's what you have to worry about if you're Matt Eberflus. This is the time that the struggling teams are starting to ask themselves, do we make a change after the season? And if so, who do we want?
I want to know how seriously you took the, I don't know if it's scuttlebutt, I don't know if it's rumor mill, I don't know if it's just people throwing things out there, about how closely linked Ben Johnson was to a job that wasn't open here.
I haven't really paid much attention to it. And if that's true in any way, shape, or form, it can swing back around very easily in early January. I know this, Ben Johnson is highly, highly respected as the best offensive mind in football right now. He took a calculated risk by pulling his name out of the Washington running. Seattle was interested as well. He decided to stay in Detroit. That's going to pay off. His name's going to be at the top of the A-list again. So if there was anything to that talk could reignite. If that's a job that he's looking at, and wouldn't that be something if he stays in the division and faces the Lions twice a year? You don't see that happen very often. It's not unprecedented, but you don't see it happen very often where a guy leaves one team and takes the head coaching job with another team in that same division.
Mike, I'm trying to figure out, how can I maximize my enjoyment of the crumbling New York Jets and the beginning of the denouement of Aaron Rodgers? Like, give us a primer into how to get the most possible schadenfreude out of this at every turn.
We already hit denouement. He used that last week. He used sanguine, esoteric, and eloquence.
He's stealing my bit.
Ooh, he's flirting with Dan.
He's stealing my bit. Yeah.
He's doing the whole high-level SAT words. I've always said, ever since it dawned on me, that he's a phony intellectual like Otto, the character played by Kevin Kline in The Fish Called Wanda.
Don't call me stupid.
It's amazing. They're favored. They've been favored in two of the last three games, and they lost all three of them. They're favored tomorrow night against the 6-2 Texans. And I know they beat the Texans last year 30-6 without Aaron Rodgers, but it feels like everything's crumbling. Like, who's mustering the hope and the faith and the belief in the Jets to actually put enough money on them that the line has ended up Jets minus 1.5.
Yeah.
Am I missing
something here?
I think it's the injuries, right, to the receivers, the Diggs news on top of Nico Collins. That's what I think. That would be my guess. When they got
Devontae Adams, they went from 2-point underdogs to 2-point favorites. So I just don't know why people believe in the Jets. And it's fun to watch. And here's something I raised yesterday. If they lose tomorrow night, and if the starting quarterback of a contending team gets injured this weekend with one more full weekend of games before the trade deadline, does Aaron Rodgers, the quarterback, ask Aaron Rodgers, the general manager, for a trade to that contending team?
Well, that's what exactly where I was going next with you is the trade deadline. It's here. It's coming. It's next time we talk to you, it will have passed. We saw the Vikings got Cam Robinson to deal with their left tackle issues. What else do you see percolating or the possibilities now that we see all these teams that are kind of still in the mix after last week's action?
Well, the Texans, you mentioned that they're down Stephon Diggs. Nico Collins has been injured. There's no point trying to trade for a guy in that short week before the Thursday night game. In the aftermath of that game, they could be looking for help at receiver. The Steelers have a bye this weekend, gives them a chance with the coaching staff to step back and say, what's out there? Is there a potential for a trade at receiver to help boost that offense? We've already seen some receivers get traded, and I think we could see some more depending upon who's available and what the price is. And beware of the reports that, like, you know, oh, such and such team isn't having a fire sale and these mid-level players aren't available. That's baloney. That's just teams trying to create a market and drive up some leverage. There aren't that many truly untouchable players in the NFL. And if there's a player that a team wants, there's a price that will make that trade happen. We've seen more trades already than I've expected, and it may be that's going to be the bulk of it. But I'd say watch the Texans, watch the Steelers, watch the Lions to trade for a pass rusher. I feel like they haven't done it because teams recognize they need a pass rusher, so they want too much. But yeah, there could be some more movement. And there's another weekend of games for teams that are contenders on the fringes to come to the conclusion that they do have a fork stuck in them, and it's time to try to move some veteran players and get some compensation via draft picks for next year.
I feel like this question is valid yet again in 2024. Is Joe Flacco elite?
Stop it.
Well, What a strange couple of days for the Colts. First of all, a quarterback taps out because he's tired for the first time that I can remember. I mean, remember when they picked up Byron Leftwich when he was at Marshall and carried him down the field so he could keep playing? He had a broken leg or something like that. And they lifted him. Two linemen lifted him and carried him down the field. Quarterbacks don't come out of games. That had to cause players in the locker room to look sideways at Anthony Richardson. You throw on top of it the fact that he really is this boom or bust. Like, it's either spectacular or it's a nightmare. He was 2 for 13 for 81 yards and a 69-yard touchdown at one point in the first half of the game on Sunday against the Texans. So, you know, Flacco, look at what he did for the Browns last year. Settled everything down, took them to the playoffs. Yeah, they lost in the opening round of the playoffs. But Flacco is a former Super Bowl MVP, highest-paid player in football twice. And unlike most of those high-end franchise quarterbacks, when the window closes on being a starter, he just hangs around and he loves football and he's willing to hold a clipboard and wait for his chance. And the Colts chose winning over developing Richardson because Richardson needs reps. But whether it's the coaching staff possibly being in trouble, front office possibly being in trouble, or the guys in the locker room saying, what are we doing here? What are we doing? We got to win. They make the flip to Flacco, and he gets a chance to go to Minnesota and get him to 5-4.
Is there a comp for Flacco historically? Just like a guy who was really good and then never left? Like, was that what, I don't remember.
Vinny Testaverde?
Or George Blanda or Earl Morrill? Like, I'm just wondering if it's like, oh, you're still here. I guess, yeah, you can quarterback.
He was at the highest heights twice. Yes. The contract he signed after Super Bowl 47 made him the highest paid player in football. When they restructured it 3 years later, highest paid player in football, Super Bowl MVP. I can't think of a guy who was sufficiently devoid of ego that he was willing to say, fine, I won't be the starting quarterback. I mean, think of some of the other great quarterbacks in recent years. Peyton Manning, Tom Brady. Do you really think they would have just hung around?
No, that's what I'm saying.
They walk away. They walk away.
Lack of ego is an interesting thing. He just likes it.
Yeah, he loves football.
And that's, seriously, that's cool.
I think he's got like 25 kids. So I think that, you know, this keeps him out of a pretty hectic house.
Philip Rivers-esque.
I actually think there might be a LeBron arc here if he stays in the league long enough.
One of them might just get up to the NFL. Years ago, Mike, when the late, great Doug Buffon was such a big part of what we did here at The Score, and he would always get in so early, and he would sit in the lunchroom in the old building, and he'd have his legal pad out and his cup of coffee, and he would be taking us. Like, Doug, you're here so early. Oh, little buddy, I had to get out of the house. I can't be there. He just would rather be at work.
Yep.
Mike, when we look at what's going on right now with all the coaches, and as you mentioned, there's a lot of teams that are still kind of hanging around. Which coach is on the hottest seat right now, in your estimation?
Well, you know, there's a point where it gets so hot that it's not hot anymore. Like with Mike McCarthy, his contract expires after this season. I mean, don't we know that there's no way Jerry Jones is going to bring him back? Jerry Jones would have fired him if Jerry Jones wasn't too cheap to pay him to not work for the Cowboys for 2024. And it's all still to be determined because nobody's really done yet. And I can't imagine Dave Canales being one and done in Carolina. First of all, who the hell would want that job if it opens up again? I was worried about Gerard Mayo talking his way out of his job after only 1 year with the Patriots with some of the things he said publicly, although maybe he should call his team soft every week. But yeah, I mean, we're getting closer to that point where we're going to see who's really in trouble. But McCarthy, to me, is the guy who is in the hottest of hot seats because the team's 3-4 and they had to issue a statement last year after they went 12-5 and made it to the playoffs that they aren't making a coaching change. Jerry Jones is probably not going to bring him back next year unless they really turn things around.
I think Doug Peterson is probably the...
Oh, well, yes. Yeah, I forgot about him.
I just like giving him the algebra problem.
But I think McCarthy, it's the hottest for McCarthy because there's no buyout.
Got it. Mm. Got it. That makes sense.
Yeah, it's looking painful for some coaches around here.
Well, around here, specifically, that's why I say it's a big day for Matt Eberflus. Where are you, Mike, on this sort of larger issue that we're talking about the fine line between empowering players, as the Bears have, to be outspoken and to have their place on their leadership council and to have a voice, and also having a clear enough top-down managerial structure so there isn't too much blurring going on?
Yeah, you want to be able to trust your players to handle themselves. And if they can't, that's when you have to intervene. So it's a delicate dance that you do as a coach. You don't want the players saying and doing things that'll make it harder to win football games, but you don't want them to feel like they're robots, they're automatons, they're like members of the Patriots where they can't say anything lest they be chewed out by the head coach. So there's a balance to be struck there. You do want your players to feel comfortable saying whatever is on their mind, but you also want to trust them to not say things that will make it harder to achieve the greater goal of winning football games. And either you have guys that you can trust or you don't.
Mike, thanks as always.
See you. Have a great week.
It's Mike Florio. This segment brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today.
I have an important question.
Yes?
How much is Jeff Saturday looking like Ozzie Guillen?
Yeah.
And even like the shirt jacket combo is something that Ozzie would wear.
I don't think they look alike. I think they have a similar look today.
Yes. No, they do have a similar look today. The hair is similar. The beard is similar. And the shirt jacket combo is similar.
I can guarantee you this. They don't sound alike.
Well.
Sound very different.
Yeah, Ozzie is an original.
If Jeff Saturday develops a thick Venezuelan accent, then we'll have something else to talk about.
They both led a football team, though, right?
Well, I was trying to figure out when Tim Legler started to look like Sammy the Bull Gravano.
Wait, what?
Look at Jeff Saturday.
Yeah, that's wild.
Sorry, I really had to get that off my chest.
Yeah, he really does. He doesn't quite
Flacco is elite.
No, he's not.
I wanna, yes, can we point a clarification here? Flacco has five kids. Like, let's not be too dramatic here. He's got five kids. They're ages 5 to 11. It's like, it's not like he, I mean, I know that's still crazy.
Downstate Studs is not impressed.
No, that's still, Studs. No. Dan, will you listen to me? For a second, I know that's a lot of kids, but it's not 25. He made it sound like he was going to be a Philip. I was expecting like 13 kids, like
Philip
Rivers.
No, five is a lot.
Five is a lot, bro. 2024, what's being way over dramatic on the number of kids.
At some point, the kids start raising each other, and that's not good.
After three. Three is the hardest number. Yeah. At four, they start to self-police. My ex-husband was one of seven. He told me this.
I am picturing Studs as Cletus the slack-jawed yokel standing there and calling out the kids, Brittany, Tammy.
Was it one of them, Cuber?
Ma, get off the dang roof!
Are those the names of the kids, Studs? Tammy,
I can't remember. There's like 20 of them.
The things I remember. Yeah, Downstate Studs is not impressed.
It's not that I'm not impressed by the number of kids, but when Florio said he's got like 25 kids, I was expecting like 10 plus, and I was disappointed to see five.
You thought he was Philip Rivers out here. He's not.
So you understand like how that's a big difference.
Raise one.
It is a big difference, but
raise one.
I'm not three, saying I'm it's not difficult. My sister has three kids. I know it's difficult. Like, you know, I've seen it from the outside.
You guys are built different. Hey, I'm going to side with Studs here because they make their own, like, actual sausage from scratch and everything. The Studs family is built a little different.
All right. Well,
yeah, Studs, my uncle raised other families, four girls.
Other families like, aren't built like your family. That's what I'm trying to tell you right now.
Okay.
It may take an NFL quarterback salary to now raise five kids, you know, and afford them. But that's just my own two cents.
Well, you can always sell a couple of them if you need to. And trade them in. You know, upgrade them if you can.
You're always worried about me getting taken out of context, which I appreciate, but I don't know where you're going to put that one.
I always threaten that to my kids. You know, so I can always, you know, trade you in. You know, you take you in, upgrade you, you know, swap the SIM card out, get a better model. You know?
You just need a dog. You need a dog.
We'll have a dog.
You have a friend.
We have our grandkid dog.
You have a dog friend.
Yes, I guess that's what you'd call it. It's better
over here. AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port and trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.